I'm talking on behalf of a project called Ask AIDS, which stands for African Sexual Knowledges of HIV and AIDS. And I'll come back to that quote. But in many ways, it sums up some of the things that we are being engaged with. And it illustrates why we did the project we did. We all know that HIV/AIDS has been worked on within many contexts for many years. But we had some slightly different starting points, and we had some slightly different emphasis in our research. What we argue is that there is a need. We know a lot about statistics. It sort of summarizes much of what Elaine's been saying. We wanted to know how young people contextualize and gain their knowledge about sexuality. And I'll come back to that, and about some of the assumptions that underpin much of HIV/AIDS policy. We also set out to know what young people want from AIDS education. And the young people we worked with, quite deliberately because of basic education, were primary age students. So the top year, the final year of primary education, in three countries, Tanzania, Kenya, and South Africa. And we were also interested in an idea from Basil Bernstein that if you're going to work in these sorts of territories, the school curriculum needs to engage with the knowledge that young people gain and learn outside of school, as well as the knowledge they gain in school. And so one of our projects, and the second, there are two arms to this. We finished this stage. The second stage was very much concerned with that. So we wanted to know what the reality is, not make assumptions about it. And we believed, and it picks up many of the themes that we've heard already, that the most powerful influence on young people's sexual behaviour is their cultural influences and beliefs. It's the community they live in. And that came very, very closely. So we took a sociocultural perspective. Again, picking up on many themes already spoken about, we believed that the methodology we used, which was about consulting young people, we were interested to see whether that could do two things. Whether it could be empowering for the young people themselves, and I'll come back to it, whether it could actually engage in change, whether it could be a vehicle for change within the communities that those young people were living in. And I'll come back to the method we used was very, very simple. We worked with 2 to 3 schools in each country, and we asked for a group of young people, a group of teachers, and a group of community members. First, we interviewed them all and held focus groups. Then we gave the young people cameras, and I'm going to show you some of the photos they took. We gave them cameras and said, go out and take a picture, which for you symbolizes where you gained your sexual knowledge, and then we'll talk to you about the picture. We also gave them cameras and said, make little videos, the sex education you have now and the sex education you would like to have. And we showed the second video, the sex education I would like to have, to the teachers and held a discussion with them about what they thought about it. Then we brought everybody together at the end and showed them the photographs and said, so what do you make of this? And I'll try and tell you that story of what they did make of it. I want to say that what the project raised, and it's not just this project, lots of other researchers raised, is the complexity of gender and sexuality education. And the view that girls are both innocent and dangerous, and that therefore there is a double need to control them. What we did see was that girls, and this again is not new information, but that in context of poverty, which is where our research was taking place, both rural and urban, sex is closely linked to money. So either it's a way of earning money, it's a way for your parents to help put you to earn money, or people use money to have sex. So there's a deep connection. What it also raised was the cultural taboos around talking about sex, especially across the genders. And that's a big issue for teachers. Teachers, in many cases, were culturally caught in a sort of tension between the expectations of their community and the expectations of national policy. We've already heard about the tensions or the difficulties, complexities are around religious messages, political messages, AIDS policy in many cases previously being connected to an abstinence-only policy of sex education. And that's problematic, A, because we know it doesn't work on research, and I'll come back to that. One of the big things we came across is that the myth that if you give young people knowledge, and this is the great adult fear that we came across, if you give young people knowledge about sex, it will lead to experimentation and promiscuity. When in fact, we also know from research that the opposite is true. But that is a deeply held belief. And it's something the young people in particular talk very strongly about. So given all of those tensions, teachers, quite understandably, they do it in this country too, retreat to talking about the facts, talking about the biology, talking about the disease, because it's personally, socially, or culturally very challenging to do something different. So the lack of teacher preparation and support in dealing with these very, very complex issues is quite central to our project. I wanted to go back. I've skipped one, I realise. I want to just, from this slide, pick out something. That in terms of HIV/AIDS, I think most of us know the seriousness of that, particularly in sub-Saharan Africa. Two things are important I want to pick out from here. One is that we know that young people, the recent falls in HIV/AIDS, there is progress in the last years. The spread of HIV is being reversed. And the people who are doing it are young people. That's where, although rates are very high amongst that group, that's where the greatest fall is occurring. So this is about why it's so important to work with young people. Secondly, we know that girls and women are disproportionately affected by HIV/AIDS. Young women, 15 to 24, are 8 times more likely to be infected than boys. So this is a very, very serious issue for young people. We know that schooling is, in general, a protective factor. So just being educated is actually good, as well as there's a double protective factor, that a specific HIV/AIDS education is a means of prevention. Okay, so let me just show you what the young people said, or through their photos. This was, to remind you, they were given cameras and were asked to go and take photos. So they took photos of their community and their school. This, they said, was the first source of information and learning, was wall paintings. So these were the messages they were seeing around in their schools and in their communities. That should say bad company. Literature. And the sort of literature that they were seeing largely in their community, much of it pornographic. And I'll come back to pornography. Pornography for many of the young people was the only place in which they could go to find out about sex. But interesting images, because some changing images of women in here. So this is obviously somewhere to go to have sex in a hotel. And then they took photos of things they saw in their community. HIV transmission through sharp objects. This is a shower, a commonly shared shower sponge. This is the theme that's already come up, the danger of going to get water or going out into public spaces for girls, often being asked to do these duties. And this is an interesting one because the story told about this photo was that the young boy and the man are playing with a mobile phone, but what can't be seen is that the man is actually stroking or enjoying the woman's body behind the back, so he's distracting the young child. This is a teenage prostitute who's pregnant. They talked a lot about seeing sex in public places like dances and so on. And in schools, the relationship, was Chris picking up on what Chris was saying, some of the struggles they had in the school itself and some of the fights for competition, the competition between girls for boyfriends. So they were talking about intergenerational sex, abusive environments, including school, including teachers having sex with girls, sex for money, sexual violence, and the notion that when these things happened, the girls were accused of being provocative. So it's this notion, again, of blaming the girls. So what did they want? They wanted looser boundaries between in and out of school knowledge. They wanted to be able to express, to discuss what they knew with teachers. They saw that as a safe place to have conversations about sex. They wanted more interactive and active pedagogy, which talked about real-life situations that they were engaged in. And they wanted genuine dialogues with trusted, open, and informed adults. And they had great faith in teachers as being those people. And there's a quote from one young woman. So talking about how the teachers were frightened of talking about these matters, and that's understandable given the lack of preparation and in many ways the cultural risk. So what we did is we showed similar slides to the ones I've just shown to you to a day conference of community members and teachers. And I was amazed, actually. I never imagined it would have that power. Whether it will be long-lasting, of course, is another matter. But the first thing that happened is it challenged the notion of innocence and naivety in childhood. And what many of the community members are saying was, you've showed us that our assumptions are wrong. I was amazed that people would say that in public. I don't think that would happen in England. But I was actually quite amazed at how open to it they were. What the dialogue also showed was how desperate young people were for this responsible and mutual conversation. And there were some amazing conversations, often between older women and the student representatives in the group about what they wanted to do. And it did show signs of bringing about change, which is actually what we're trying to do in the second phase of the project, to test this out as a way of working. So what I want to finish up with is what notions did I feel were challenged what were our conclusions in many ways? Well, the first is that we have to move beyond romantic notions of children as passive and innocent. Clearly, the worlds in which they were living were highly sexualized. They didn't talk to adults about it, but actually I didn't either when I was that age. And they were desperate to try to engage responsibly about that. There is this philosophical and religious notion of which children are prone to impiety and need of firm authority. So actually the last thing you do is engage in a serious conversation with them about matters of sexuality. And what they were arguing for, and this is another theme that's come up, is the need to be seen as agents and citizens who can be involved in a deliberative and democratic practice. They're desperate to be treated as responsible agents who can make sexual decisions given the right information and given the opportunity to talk through very complex decisions. And through dialogue in the family and the community. One of the things that's been quite interesting for me is many of the community members said, I've always seen outside interference as a bad thing in many ways. What they were saying is, by doing this, you've enabled us to talk about, you've given us permission. Culturally, we couldn't have that permission, but you've come in here and created permission for us to talk about these issues. I think the last two points are simple. What we're arguing is that we need a curriculum which does put together what young people's real lives are out of school and give them opportunities to discuss that in school. So I'm going to finish with this quote, which actually became the title of the book we've written about this. The teachers are careful with us because they think we're still too young. They think we're too young to know. They think we're going to be naughty or sometimes experiment with what they told us. But who wants to experiment with AIDS? And I think that quote, in many ways, sums up the key learnings from the project. Okay, I'm going to stop there. I beat the red flag.